So what is Kevin Stefanski's identity? I want to get to these Donovan Mitchell comments coming up here in less than 10 minutes. But what is Kevin Stefanski's identity? Right now, I think he's looking for one with his team. He is a guy, again, he is a manager. He is not Lombardi. He's not Dan Campbell. He is not going to line up and do defensive drills with these guys. And I know that that's what fans want. Maybe that's what the Browns need. Maybe that's what's missing in the Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, like a Mike Vrabel is somebody who will do that. Get in there and mix it up.
Guys, they played the audio themselves right in front of the guy. I mean, yeah, he can be very Bill Lumberg in how he does the business. And there are times they went, and I think he's gotten more emotional as time has gone on. I do.
There are different ways. There are different ways to do it. Like Kyle Shanahan has never been warm and fuzzy, but he commands the respect of the room. Part of it is his resume, his last name.
He knows how to talk to football players because of his dad.
Yes,
he knows.
Yes, I think that matters. You know, Stefanski, we have asked plenty of players over the years or people that have been around that locker room, like, what is the secret sauce? How does that guy who doesn't seem to be all that fired up, doesn't seem to be getting in guys' faces, how does he command respect? And we've had people say that he absolutely does. And he's obviously got the hardware now with the 2-time coach of the year. He hasn't had a huge playoff run. I mean, normally that you know, Kyle Shanahan has that. McVay has that. Like, guys have that. Like, Bill Belichick, he has his way, right? He has his way over the years. But, like, there was no doubt he commanded respect for the better part of a football coaching career, 40 years.
He does what Shanahan does, and you know I'm no fan of the guy. He doesn't really do stupid. Like, this last year with Brandon Ayuk was the closest to stupid that I have seen the 49ers partake in. Like, I can't – can you think of another incident I can't think of where they've kind of been like, well, this is kind of stupid. What are we doing here? Like, I don't know. And I think that even though he has the same type of mentality that's very stoic, he doesn't do stupid very well.
Mike Tomlin is another one.
Yeah. Stefanski, over his now 5 seasons, he's dealt with a lot of stupid.
He has. He absolutely has.
And really, honestly, it's not where he's dealt with it. He's had to put up with a lot of stupid. And I think there's a difference there. And so when we get into these moments here where you're 1-3 and someone's got to dig deep, it's got to come from somebody wearing a uniform. It ain't going to come from him. And I do think that Browns fans have a problem with that because they want to save their season. And there's nothing worse that a Browns fan wants to do. There's nothing they want to do more than to go in a locker room and start cussing them out and talking to them as men and get them going. And they feel the head coach should do that. He is not. I've never accused him of doing that because he's not that guy.
Boy, Kenny, in the offseason, when we finally got the news of the Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski extensions, I remember posing the question, when somebody like Kevin Stefanski gets an extension, normally when a head coach gets an extension and has the success that he has had, especially with a franchise like this, and getting to the playoffs twice, and doing it with a bunch of different quarterbacks, and winning 2-time coach of the year, what happens when they get those extensions? I pose this question. When it happened, do they get increased power?
I don't think he has.
Normally they do.
Usually they do.
Normally they do.
Usually,
like,
they do.
Sean Payton didn't come in to New Orleans with all the power in the world. He amassed it over time, and then it became his organization. It just did. It flat out just did. And they weathered the storm. They had a huge scandal. And then
he was out of football for a year, technically.
Yeah, he was out of football. And it was unequivocal when he came back. It's your team. It's your team. You make the decisions.
Yeah, you're right.
You get to handle personnel. You get to handle everything.
I mean, you've brought up before on the air, I pause, dump it if you have. No, you brought it up on the air before. You have people who have told you it was not his decision to let go in Alex Van Pelt.
Van Pelt, right. And
you said it.
And so I'll ask the question today, is they are 1-3, and we are asking a bunch of existential questions about a football team and an organization.
Yeah. I mean, he wins coach of the year, we're taking power away.
Right, that's what I want to know. Is that a fly in the ointment? Is that going to be a problem? Like, for this team, because one thing I think Stefanski has done really well over the years is deal ultimately with a lot of stuff, a lot of BS, a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And I think he has shown, whether it was the COVID year, I mean, he came in with an unbelievable amount of adversity that some other coaches couldn't do. Other coaches, like, threw their hands up in the air and said, it was COVID. What was I supposed to do? Kevin Stefanski, they were doing the work, and they were getting it done, and they were getting results. Okay? The Odell Beckham stuff, things went off the rails there, obviously. And I think they learned from that. I do, and the Baker stuff behind the scenes, it wasn't pretty. But then you get this Deshaun Watson. I thought it was a cheat code at the time. I'm like, man, the Browns got an ultimate shortcut here. Well, clearly it wasn't. Clearly it wasn't. And I wonder how that is in that locker room, in that organization, when you have a head coach who is being tested again here in year five.
John and Wadsworth, you're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Not bad. Go ahead, John.
So you guys mentioned something in the last segment. I was actually trying to call in yesterday morning to say something you were talking about. Something is definitely broken in this locker room. As Browns fans, we have become so accustomed to knowing the emotional vibe and the roller coaster that we ride to where, you know, you guys said yesterday, when we missed that extra point, we were like, oh, God, here we go. We knew it was going to bite us. And this is basically the same team we had last year, and it just feels like someone, you know, peed in their Cheerios. It does not feel the same.
It feels like they're missing leadership in some fashion.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this because I'm anti-Deshaun. I'm not. I'm tired of that roller coaster, too, but I have a hard time not thinking that he might not be at the center of this because, you know, look how the team responded in the games he was out last year. They just had, like you used the word chutzpah before, they had that. And then Amari Cooper saying last year with Flacco that, you know, that Joe Flacco was an energy multiplier. I mean, there's just signs on the wall. Like, you have to wonder if these guys are really bought into Deshaun. Are they tired of the roller coaster? Something's just off. Something is just off.
Now, can it change if he builds on some of the success he had last game?
Well, he has to play well. That's the only way it's going to change. I mean, there's guys like there are guys who, you know, they're not that great, and guys go through the wall for him, and they end up looking better because they're not that great, and they somehow get guys' attention as leaders. There's been plenty of quarterbacks in this league that are not Allen, not Mahomes type of talents, and they get guys to play with them and play for them in a lot of cases because they're able to lead and they know what makes the other guys, and they know what makes each other tick. I mean, hell, I hate to say it. I think that Baker Mayfield learned a lot of lessons when he was here about being a leader, being a true leader. I mean, to a lot of people, he stuck his bleeping foot in his mouth talking about Tom Brady last week on some podcast, and all of a sudden, what did they do? They went out and beat the brakes off the Eagles and embarrassed them again like they did in the postseason last year. I mean, you go back and watch that game, they're playing with him. They're playing for him. Like, you can learn some of this stuff over time, but things change. And I don't know if they have enough time to do all that right now. Peter in Perrysburg, you're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Peter.
I feel like the coaching is the biggest problem, and I want to say, I don't want the coaches fired, but what were they doing in West Virginia? What were they doing in Berea? It's like they didn't show up for training camp and just rolled into the season. And I know, you know, Stefanski said, well, we got to get better, and it's like, yeah, no duh, you guys don't look like you're practicing. And Devil's Advocate, Lima, will say, well, what do you want them to say? I want them to – I don't know what they're doing in practice. What were they doing in the offseason? And to say, like, it's all the leadership, it's all in Deshaun Watson. Like, I'm not the biggest Deshaun Watson fan in the world. But to not say that, like, the head coach isn't getting people motivated. Like, what are they – he's in charge of practice. The coaches are in charge of practice. And if they're not executing on game day, it means they're not practicing properly. They're not focusing on the right areas. And I've been saying for 5 years, I love Kevin Stefanski as a play caller 80% of the time, but 10, 15 minutes a game, he panics. And you can see it, you saw it on Sunday, because he's all about analytics. But what are the analytics of making a 58-yard field goal versus having to pin them inside the three and get a safety? What are the odds of the field goal versus executing both of those things?
Although maybe Myles Garrett changes the math on that a little bit, but I definitely get your point.
No, it's dude. Yeah. You have to do both of those, though. You have to pin them inside the three, and
which is hard to do.
Which is hard to do. You have to hope that they drop back and they don't just push. They don't do 12 personnel and push for 3 yards, and now they're at the six. Like, that's panic. That is panic.
There's also a level of accountability that's brought there, and I'll finish it up with this. Peter, thank you very much for the call, because I want to get to this Donovan Mitchell stuff, speaking of accountability. God, I'm going to bring out the dead horse and just bring out the ball bat again, but I have to do it. I've been hard on Andy Dickerson. Daryl wants to fire him. I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah,
At least I wouldn't go that far yet. I've been hard on Andy Dickerson. I know for a fact. Listen, everybody here prays at the altar of Bill Callahan. They're mad at the Browns for letting him go. Again, he wanted to coach with his son. He could have just retired if they weren't going to give him what he wanted, which he very well, I think he would have done it. There, it is known, and I think it's becoming more and more well known, that it wasn't kumbaya with the offensive line and Bill Callahan. And I think that there was a level of accountability there that he probably held not just the offensive line to, but I think anybody who talked to him in that building. So I don't think he was a warm and cuddly figure. I don't think that he was a major league jerk to everybody. I think that he just had a level of accountability on everybody. And it made those guys move. Because Kevin Stefanski, is again, he's a schemer. He's a guy who's going to draw it up on the board. He can come up with good offensive game plans. We talked about that. Hell, I think he's done it even this year. But is there going to be a level of accountability where man on man, you are going to be able to get what you need out of these guys? Bill Callahan's able to do it. It's been proven over his 30, 40 years in professional football and college football as well. Kevin Stefanski, some guys just miss that gear. And I don't know what it is. But when we talk about what Bill Callahan's missing, run game stuff, what's going on with the run game now? Offensive line, putrid, as bad as it's been in almost a decade that I've been doing this. Here with you. It's as bad as it's been. And then you just get to the level of accountability. Well, I know Bill Callahan did a lot of things, and holding people accountable was one of the main things that he did. I mean, those are three things right there. And if you don't have Bill Callahan anymore, you're going to run into problems. Or at least it seems that they're running into problems.
A coach that clearly Stefanski, you know, leaned on the man, the running game we talk about all the time. And yeah, Stefanski is a collaborator, right? You know, you have your dictator coaches. Stefanski is not that guy. Well, if you just lost one of the big collaborators, like that is going to make his job a lot more difficult.
216-474-0092. Let's get to Donovan Mitchell here. This is him yesterday, or was this from yesterday or a couple days ago? I want to know which one. Was this yesterday?
It was yesterday.
Okay, Donovan Mitchell at Media Day yesterday. Cavs are getting ready to embark on session one of their preseason and their training camp down at the IMG Academy in Florida. But he was at training camp yesterday, or Media Day yesterday. He had this to say about what transpired getting ready for this last offseason.
I knew for sure, I would say probably around January, around the Paris game. I knew for sure. I had thought about it at the beginning of the year. It's been in my mind. I mean, I knew for sure probably January, February, that this is where I wanted to be. So it was kind of funny watching everybody say that this is how I'm feeling, but I knew.
I thought that was interesting yesterday. I still wonder, had they have lost the Orlando series? Like, it wouldn't have changed his mind at all. I mean, they were in big time jeopardy of losing that series. They were down at the half in game seven against a team you had no business.
I was following along on the cruise ship. I'm going, oh my God, I can't believe this is going to happen.
Incredible. So I do wonder if that would have changed his mind, because, man, the Cavs would have been getting hammered. They would have been getting hammered by everybody for this trade not
working out. I don't
think
they would have been blaming him either. National media, I don't think, would have been blaming him.
No, they would have been.
I don't think local people would have been blaming him.
They would have been going off on the way the team was assembled, the Darius Garland situation. Mobley was horrific in that series offensively. Fortunately, Mobley came on big time at the end of the Boston series, or we'd be having totally different conversations. But the other part of that is, Donovan Mitchell, who made it known when he was in Utah that he didn't want to be in Utah, he did it behind the scenes. He did it in maybe a more professional manner than some of these other superstars. But they also drew a direct line to where? New York, and him going home, and him wanting to be a New York Knick. That stuff wasn't just made up or out of thin air. So then he gets traded to Cleveland, and he has said nothing but great things about his time in Cleveland. And you could see it in body language. You could see it in emotions. The stuff that he has said about the city.
By the way, I think that these two things can be true. I think he could like it here and like the people and also desire to go back home at some point in his career.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which I don't mean to bring that back up because he's signed, but we don't have to.
We've put that off.
I said that then. I said I wouldn't surprise me if that were the case. Go ahead.
So with all of that said, I do kind of laugh when around every turn, Donovan Mitchell is like, I mean, I was never going anywhere. And his teammates, he told us consistently that he was going to stay. Yeah, but the media was certainly on the outside looking in. He could have ended any of the speculation at any time. He chose not to. So that continued to bubble, you know, behind the scenes. Like, all right, it's one thing to tell some teammates. It's another thing to just, you know, you have reporters. You have people that follow your career. you have people that maybe Donovan Mitchell doesn't trust any media. I don't know. But he could have ended the story pretty easily, could he not have?
It could have made things easier for all of us, but I don't think it would have made things easier for him. What if a team, I mean, he is a desirable player. What if a team was willing to go out there and make some sort of a deal that he would be interested in? Maybe it's not New York. Maybe it was L.A. He couldn't play that card. The NBA, pro sports in general, is so cloak and dagger. I don't think he could actually do it. It would have saved us a lot of time and trouble. I just don't know in real time if he could have said that.
But see, this,
I want to bring it back.
This to me seemed more self-inflicted than anything. You could have ended the rumors.